Hail Dictinus! Grant us clear voices, strong sound, and good reads. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer as oblation to the sacred fire, whatever you bestow as a gift, and whatever austerities you perform, do them as an offering to me. Welcome to First Steps Offerings, the 228th episode of Three Pagans and a Cat. Our opening today comes from the Bhagavad Gita. Our opening and closing music is credited as Frostwaltz Alternate by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com and licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 4.0. You may call me Ode.
Merry meet. My name is Gwyn, Ode's mother. We are Jacksonless this week.
Yes, he declined.
He's got other things he is doing this eve.
He's busy. Let's see. Start with housekeeping. This upcoming weekend on the 29th, there is a festival happening, a Scottish festival happening at Valhalla Taproom in Kalamazoo, where there's going to be a lot of events going on, a lot of fun things, and Gwyn and I are going to be there doing tarot.
That's right.
So if you'd like to get tarot from us, you can come see us at Valhalla Taproom from noon to 6 p.m. on the 29th. Then we're housekept and...
Housewept.
Beautiful. It's been a minute since we've done a First Steps. So as a reminder, the First Steps series is very intermittent, and it's a series we do when we remember topics that like really basic beginner stuff.
Yeah.
That doesn't always get explained well, or that like is just assumed knowledge, or like stuff that people ask us about a lot. Because I get questions from people a lot about what kind of offerings to do, how to do offerings, how to dispose of offerings. Yeah, why to do offerings, what's the point of an offering, what's a good offering versus a bad offering, et cetera, et cetera. This is a subject of great concern to many people, it seems.
Who, what, where, why, and when.
And how.
And how.
Lots of questions about how.
Lots of questions.
One of the key distinctions with offerings is being able to distinguish between an offering and a sacrifice. Because those are, technically speaking, different things, even though they can look very similar. So a sacrifice is something that you're giving up. That is not necessarily like a hardship for you to give up, but it should be something that like, because you are sacrificing this, you don't have it. It should be meaningful in some way.
It should be meaningful.
Yeah. Like, it doesn't have to put you in hardship, but it should at least symbolically mean something to you to give this as a sacrifice. That's what makes it a sacrifice. That's what distinguishes it. An offering is just a gift you're giving effectively, or you might be giving it in exchange for something, but it has less of that sense of because you're giving this, you don't have it anymore, right? So like an offering is something that's more, it's easier to do over and over again. It sort of definitionally isn't going to put you through hardship, because if it was going to put you through hardship, it would definitely be a sacrifice.
True.
Even if a sacrifice doesn't have to put you through hardship. So like an offering is, I don't want to say less intense necessarily, but more balanced, maybe.
It can be more often sometimes. I mean, I think sacrifices can be a regular thing, depending on...
Rhiannon says, offering equals, hey, I bought this candy for you. Sacrifice equals, motherfucker, I really want this sweet, but it's for you. Basically, yeah. And Roshala has another comparison. Sacrifice equals, I want or need this, but I'm giving it to you because you're that important or because I want something. And an offering is, hey, let me share this cool thing with you.
And also, at least as, you know, in my research and how I've defined offerings, offerings are more often about honor and just recognition, I think, sometimes. Like, you know, you're honoring this deity or your ancestors or, you know, with a remembrance that maybe, whether it's a monthly, daily, there's just like a relationship building kind of thing with an offering.
Not that a sacrifice doesn't also build
a
relationship.
It does. It does. But a different kind of relationship, I think. At least for me.
Yeah, and this is obviously a thing that's going to vary from path to path. Because, like, for me, a lot of my understanding of sacrifices and offerings and how to give offerings and all the sort of the nitty gritty of an offering process has been self-developed based on research and what other people in adjacent practices do. But unless you are part of a tradition that has really specific, like hard and fast rules about offerings, a lot of this stuff is going to be flexible and you can sort of do whatever is appropriate to your relationship with
your deity.
Whatever being you're offering to.
And whatever religion you're in. I mean, whatever your path is, there's going to be some more traditional paths that have more specific ideas.
Yeah, especially like an initiatory tradition or something like that is more likely to have like, here is how you do offerings, don't do them any other way.
Right.
As a solitary, I don't have that problem. exactly. All my rules are self-imposed are imposed on me by the being I'm offering to.
Yeah, at least for me. Now, this may differ for other people, but for me, what offerings are not meant to be are bribes.
Describe that.
Well, like an offering can be an introduction. It is a relationship building kind of thing. It is honoring and respectful. It can be gratitude. And yes, it can be asking for intervention. But at least in my practice, it's not like sticking your quarter in a machine and expecting to get a candy bar kind of thing.
This, I think, is more complicated than it sounds. In heathenry, there's this concept of gebbo,
right?
The gift cycle. So like for me, there is a, or can be, a transactional element to an offering. Not every offering is transactional, right? Mm-hmm. Some of it is just like, hey, I was thinking of you.
Mm-hmm.
But when I am entering a transaction with a being, which is anytime I ask them to do something for me,
right?
I owe them something for that.
Mm-hmm.
How I express that debt is through offerings.
Mm-hmm.
And they pay that, the debt that they've just incurred from the offering, in whatever gift I was requesting from them. And then, you know, that cycle continues. We give each other gifts. The form of gift I have to offer to these beings is usually something like an offering. It could also be a service or some specific performance that they want done. But usually it's going to be an offering. So for me, offerings very much can be transactional. And that's actually a big part of offerings, is figuring out how much an offering is worth so that I'm not like overspending on a debt.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not putting a quarter in a vending machine, but it is paying for something.
Now, Rochella says, interesting, Gwen, when I make offerings to the outsiders at my public rituals, I tell new participants that bribery works. And that's absolutely, because that is a part of your tradition. We did that with Carr when he was still practicing druidry.
Yep.
So yeah, I totally respect that. I'm just saying that for me personally, that isn't something that...
What would you do if you needed to pay for something to a being?
Well,
like if you had a transaction you needed to...
I guess I still make an offering. Maybe it is more transactional than I have consciously been aware of, but it's more like I'm giving a gift, I guess, and asking for partnership in a relationship I've already been building.
I mean, that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm just, there's an acknowledgement, I guess, in heathenry that we have a transactional relationship.
Yeah.
And that the transactionality of that relationship doesn't make the relationship less significant.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So like the fact that I'll pay my ancestors for doing me a favor doesn't mean I don't still have a worship relationship with my ancestors.
Yeah. You know, I'm not saying a transactional kind of offering is not devotional or honoring or things like that. I'm just saying it's not a part of my practice, like in a conscious way, I guess.
So yeah, I guess that's a significant thing to figure out for your own practice. Do you have a transactional relationship with these beings?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it one purely of worship and honor?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, and so figuring out what the purpose of your offerings is before you make them.
Right.
Figure out what you're doing
before
you start. I think there's a tendency, especially with new pagans, to just like start laying out offerings immediately and just and like try to build like a habitual practice of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I understand why that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I'm not going to say that that's a bad idea, but I think it helps to know what you're trying to accomplish with that.
Yeah. Agreed.
Right. Like, are you just trying to build like the foundation of a relationship with this being? Are you just trying to get their attention?
Or are you doing it just because you think that's what you're supposed
exactly,
to
do? Exactly,
Because someone told you to. That may not be a part of your practice. If it doesn't feel natural, or if it's not something that you feel called to do, maybe you only do an offering at the Sabbats, you know, or maybe
or
not
maybe
at
you,
all.
Or maybe you never do them at regular times, right? Maybe you just do them when the spirit moves you.
Exactly, exactly. It's, and which is perfectly fine and valid if you only do offerings when you feel like it's appropriate. Like you feel like your deities are asking for something.
Now, I will say, because offerings are inherently a relational thing, what works for you might not necessarily work for the being you're building that relationship with.
Exactly. Which so, I think is important.
Exactly.
That that's, you want to build a relationship.
There's a negotiation process there, right? So like you, if you're normally a offering when the spirit moves me person, but the being you're trying to build a relationship with requires something more consistent from you. That's something you're going to have to figure out.
Yep. Maybe you don't work with that particular being.
Or maybe you change your behavior.
Maybe you change your behavior. Absolutely.
There's a push and pull there, right?
Exactly. And that change in behavior could also be a sacrifice.
Exactly. Because, you know, you're having to think differently, alter your behavior to accommodate this being. Mm-hmm. I'm saying being because you can make offerings to deities, to spirits, to ancestors, all kinds of things you can make offerings to. Mm-hmm. I guess like any non-physical being is usually who you're making an offering to. Mm-hmm. Githa says, I struggle with knowing whether or not my offering is, quote, good enough. I think that's a thing you learn through practice and through clear lines of communication with the being you're making the offering to, right? Because ultimately, they're the one who's going to decide if it meets spec.
Exactly. Like if you are working with a deity that is historical, right, as far as there is unknown, like the Greek deities,
you know, where there's like really, really good record keeping of what kind of sacrifices.
Exactly. The kinds of things that they required or that they wanted or that they liked.
Or just that they habitually got. Like talk about the Deep Nun.
Yeah. The Deep Nun for Hakati is once a month. It is done at the dark moon the day before the new moon begins. And it is essentially considered a supper that you provide to Hakati that is also for the her horde that travel with her on that night.
Her night horde.
Back in the ancient times.
The olden days.
They would leave that meal. They would essentially take things that would be things like onions or and garlic and things that would...
Grow underground.
Things that glow. Yeah, very chthonic. But other things as well. But a lot of times they would also take part of their dinner.
Just a good solid meal.
And they would leave it at a crossroads because she was a goddess of the crossroads. She, was a protector. And so they would leave it and then they would not look back. They would walk away from it. But it was believed that it also acted as a service to the poor because ultimately it was the poor who would come along and eat the food.
Mm-hmm. Also sometimes like stray dogs would, which also associated with Hecate.
Yeah, black dogs in particular were associated with her. It was a monthly practice. Mm-hmm. And it is one of those practices that still continues into modern times.
And Gwyn practices Deep Nun because she works with Hakati. So like, even if Gwyn wouldn't normally have like a monthly offering practice because she works with Hakati, she does the Deep Nun on a monthly basis.
Yep. And I don't live at a place where I can take it at a crossroads. So I have to, I have to
be creative.
Something that I do enjoy doing. And it doesn't have to be big.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be a huge offering. It's just the recognition.
Yeah. Rhiannon has a comment here. I think I'd call it a sacrifice at that point. The difference in my mind is whether or not I also, quote, benefit of the item in particular and not anything that may come from it afterwards. How do I phrase this right? I'd say the majority of offerings I do are actually sacrifices because I don't ever partake in them. What's in the bowl or cup stays in the bowl or cup until it's time for disposal. Offerings to me would be more so what I do with ancestors, where we'd share a meal or drink, or like if I'm giving them jewelry or art, then I don't wear it or display it in a place other than their area of my home. Though I suppose it's just personal preference and wording, I think a lot of people would call that all offerings. I would call those offerings unless they are like, unless they cost you something to give. But that's just a personal thing. For me, a sacrifice is something that costs me something.
Whether it's time or money or...
something I would not normally give.
Yeah.
So Githa was asking about struggling with knowing whether your offering is good enough. Mm-hmm. I think that, like I said, it comes down to having a clear line of communication with your deity and knowing what they got by tradition or, you know... So like Gwyn can't do a traditional Deep Nun, but she does the closest thing she can do to a traditional Deep Nun. And is confident that Hakati accepts that as good enough, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't have that history to fall back on to know whether your offering is acceptable, fit for purpose, and if you don't have like a good God phone is what it's usually called, like if you don't have a good sense of whether something is being accepted, you don't have like a divinatory practice that would let you sort of suss that out, the best advice I can give you for someone who doesn't have that historical basis and who isn't capable of or doesn't want to pursue like divinatory answers is to sort of build up an encyclopedia like of how costly things are. And then you do sort of a cost benefit analysis of what the purpose of this offering is versus what the cost of the offering item is, right? So, like, water is always a good baseline offering.
That's across the board.
Across the board for any being. Clean water is always just a good standard offering, but it's not necessarily an expensive offering, right? But, like, the most expensive thing you can offer is your own blood.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's your life, right? Mm-hmm. You want to make sure you're not, like, offering blood mm-hmm. for something that doesn't deserve blood.
Mm-hmm.
Blood is expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Water isn't cheap because especially when you're dealing with, like, ancient ancestors, good clean water was hard to get, mm-hmm. which is part of why it's such a good offering. But it's cheaper than blood, right? So, like, when you're trying to figure out if your offering is good enough, you're doing that sort of cost assessment of, is this thing I'm asking for, right? Is this mm-hmm. transaction, or is this relationship building, or is this honor, or is mm-hmm. this worship? Is this worth
mm-hmm.
X amount in my spreadsheet?
When we talk about blood, we're talking about in drops.
Yeah, single drop.
Single drop.
Never, I would say actually never more than a single drop of blood.
Exactly.
You don't need any more than that because blood is so extremely expensive.
Mm-hmm.
We did a blood magic episode. Go back and listen to that one. We talked about it pretty extensively there. But so, like, blood, most expensive. Water, reasonably expensive. A reasonable price for pretty much anything.
Mm-hmm.
But then you get into things like food from your own plate, right? How much does food from your own plate cost? It costs more than water because it's something you would have been eating. So mm-hmm. it's a little bit of a sacrifice. Maybe not a huge sacrifice, but a little bit of one.
Mm-hmm.
You're putting away something you would have eaten to not eat now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, more expensive than water that you can just get from your tap. Incense, relatively cheap, easy mm-hmm. offering, right? So you would have to burn a lot of incense to equal food from your plate. So you just sort of build your understanding of what something costs.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand this doesn't feel like very spiritual mm-hmm. or like it feels very mechanical, but this is genuinely how, at least that's how I process mm-hmm. this, is like things have values.
Mm-hmm.
They have metaphysical as well as qualitative values.
Mm-hmm.
And those values make them cost different amounts.
Rochelle
says, depends on the incense. Mm-hmm. Effort and crafting also counts to the cost. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like a stick of incense that you buy in a pack at Meijer costs significantly less than incense that you make in your home with, you know, raw materials you've acquired over time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if I pull together all my components and I craft an incense specifically for this being and for this purpose, and then I burn that, that's a significantly more costly incense
mm-hmm.
than just a stick of rose incense from mm-hmm. a pack I have 30 of.
Unless you get the sense that that is fine with the deity you're working with.
Right. But we're talking right now. I'm specifically talking about, like, people who don't get a good sense of that.
Right. I would also include candle flame.
Mm-hmm.
Because candles,
they burn down.
They burn down. So, if it's a candle you've made or rolled or bought, there is still value to that candle
and to that flame and energy. The candle can be an offering.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it's not a very expensive offering unless it's like a handmade candle
mm-hmm.
or one you've been saving for a specific thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of us have so many candles on hand.
Mm-hmm.
But if this is your one and only candle, right, then it costs more.
Mm-hmm.
It's all relative to your circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
If this offering is the last candle in your house and you don't know when you're going to be able to get more, that becomes a much more expensive candle than all the identical candles before it.
Mm-hmm. It's the same thing, like, if you wanted to offer essential oil. Essential oils, depending on which one you're using,
mm-hmm.
like, they can be very costly.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have a lot of them, that is something that you could also...
Yeah, one drop of frankincense oil will get you quite far.
Oh my God. But then there's also olive oil is a wonderful offering,
mm-hmm.
depending on the deity, whoever that you're working with. If you have that record of, oh yeah, they used to offer olive oil, you know, or they used to offer sandalwood, mm-hmm. or they used mm-hmm. to offer myrrh.
Olive oil was a very common one,
common, because olives were valuable.
Exactly.
And so even though...
And you have to press so many olives to make olive oil.
Oh my God. And the same with wine. Wine mm-hmm. is valuable because it takes so many...
There's so much effort that goes into its creation.
That is something that still holds value, even though now you can get olive oil relatively inexpensively. Mm-hmm.
But especially if you're dealing with ancestors or with old deities, mm-hmm. they remember that original value.
Exactly.
They have that symbolic value still attached to them.
Exactly. Which is why olive oil can be...
And clean water.
So that if you don't have frankincense mm-hmm. or myrrh, if you don't have the essential oils...
If you don't have a king's offering,
yes.
right, you can still make a valuable offering.
Mm-hmm.
And what you have access to is stuff that maybe a, you know, a peasant in ancient Greece wouldn't have had access to, you know?
Exactly. Salt, as long as you're not doing it outside on the ground.
Yeah.
But salt was also incredibly valuable.
Rochelle says old deities and spices, cinnamon or black pepper especially.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Even though they're commonplace to us.
Right. They don't feel expensive to us.
They don't feel expensive to us. But rosemary, lavender, olive oil, all of these different things were very, salt, the pepper, they were all very valuable.
And very much there is a quality of the more work that goes into a thing, the more valuable the offering is. So a mass-produced candle is less costly than a handmade candle. Even if you didn't hand make the candle, someone else did. Someone else put personal energy and time and effort into it instead of a machine doing it for mass production, right? So that's not to say that a mass-produced candle doesn't have value. It does. It just has slightly less value than a handmade candle.
And if all you can afford right now is to go to the Dollar Tree and get a dollar candle or $1.25, because it's not a $1.25 store, then it's valuable to you.
Right. It's circumstantially valuable.
Yes.
Your circumstances can significantly alter the value of your offerings. If you have no money in your bank account and all you can offer is this match you're lighting and just holding until it burns down too far, like that is a valuable offering because that's all you have.
So, and then we're going into sacrifice territory.
Exactly. If this is all you have access to and you're willing to offer that, and you won't have it once it's offered, then it's a sacrifice, you know, if it costs you something to do.
And especially, I think, you know, because yes, so there are transactional things that we do, whether they're deities or land spirits or ancestors
or whoever.
There is
dream beings. There's all kinds of options.
Yeah. But there's also this, at least for me, inherently an honor and a relationship and, you know, a devotion that goes into it for me. That may not be the case for everybody. But for me, there is a, I am giving this to you, not always because I want something, but just because I want to.
Yeah. I would say even in transactional offerings, because I do transactional offerings all the time. Like I said, Gebbo is a big thing in heathenry. The gift cycle is part of maintaining my relationships with them. I ask for something, they ask for something, and that's important. That's how our relationships are built. But even in those transactional offerings, I'm asking them specifically for a reason. And the reason is because I love and honor and respect them. Like, I am devoted to them. I'm not asking someone else. I'm asking you because you're my partner in this, because...
We've built a relationship
because I honor you and I love you and I worship you and you're important to me. That's why I'm asking you for help. Brandon says, I think I realize why I typically use sacrifice over offering, and it just comes down to routine. If you've got yourself a good routine offering schedule set up, then you've already got like the cost of items set aside in your mind. Since I don't typically give up things to my deities outside of requesting help or doing a spell or something, then even the smaller things I give feel more like a sacrifice instead. That makes perfect sense. Join our Tiger Crystal at Apothecary Teas. This shop produces fragrant, aesthetically beautiful teas that delight all the senses, with handcrafted tea blends from white to red to green. This week, I suggest Forest Chai with a blend of Douglas fir needles, white oak bark, cinnamon, juniper, anise, and nutmeg. Find them at ApothecaryTeaStore.com or on Facebook at Apothecary Teas LLC. So now that we've talked about sort of the gist... Of offerings, I figured we'd go through like what types of offerings you can give and sort of the styles in which you can give offerings. And then the ever popular topic of how do you dispose of offerings?
Oh my God. That is such a popular.
Asked constantly. So
yeah, that's a popular
so
one.
So first, I guess we'll talk about types of offerings. One of the big ones is food. Most beings will accept a food offering of some kind. Sometimes they want specific foods. Sometimes they'll take whatever's on your plate. Sometimes they'll take whatever's in your pantry. Sometimes they'll tell you they want a specific thing right at the moment that they want it, or like when you're in the grocery store. Sarenth has a fun story about walking down the liquor aisle and being told he has to get something he absolutely doesn't want because the gods want it.
Like when we did do that offering to the outdweller spirits.
Back when we did the ADF style rituals.
Yeah, it was, you know, really expensive beer and really expensive chocolate.
Yeah, you bribe them with good shit. But like Finn is saying, just give Loki energy drinks. Yeah, like Loki and the UPG of most of his worshippers likes chocolate, cinnamon candy, mm-hmm. energy drinks, stuff that's sweet, spicy, or makes you go fast.
Mm-hmm.
And that's stuff you just sort of build up a catalog in your brain of the things that they like over time.
When we did that ritual for Lunasad to Lu,
mm-hmm.
I made bread.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Lu is a bread-related deity.
Yeah. So bread is often a really good gift.
Especially if you can home make your bread.
Yeah, especially if you can make it yourself.
Because, again, adding your personal time and energy and effort and work process in increases the value of the offering.
And if you are gluten-free, like I am now, you can still make bread, and it's going to be even more costly. So
Rochella says, do you build yours? I assume you're talking about that sort of catalog of offerings in your brain or in your book. The offerings that I make regularly, I usually just sort of keep in my brain, mm-hmm. and maybe I'll write them down eventually if I'm trying to explain them to someone.
Mm-hmm.
But especially if it's either a really specific offering for a being I don't work with very closely or very often,
mm-hmm.
or if it's a being who frequently asks for new or different things, mm-hmm. I will write it down in my book, like, this is what they've liked before.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of times what I'll do as well, especially like for Hecate, eggs, garlic,
mm-hmm.
onions, wine. These are things I always try to make sure I have on hand because I know those are some of the basics yeah. that I can offer.
Yeah. So like once you know what, especially food offerings they like, just try to keep some in stock.
Mm-hmm.
When we lived in the apartment, when we first started the podcast, I had a regular practice offering red fruit to the house spirits because that was mm-hmm. all they wanted. So I was constantly trying to keep red fruit in the house.
Yep. Yep. Apples, raspberries, uh-huh. strawberries.
Didn't matter what it was.
Yeah.
Just had to be red.
It doesn't have to be a lot.
No.
You know, mm-hmm. just a small portion.
No, although the way, okay, we're going to segue a little bit into styles of offerings before we get back to types because this story sucks. So they wanted red fruit and milk. Those were the two offering things they wanted. But they didn't want me to just set it out for them. They wanted me to put the red fruit in the milk, drink the milk, and then eat the fruit. I was like, do I have to? That tastes awful, y'all. Why do I have to do this? But that was what they wanted, so that was what I had
to
do.
That's what you did.
So some offerings are things you set out. Some offerings are things you consume or mm-hmm. partake in mm-hmm. some way. And the offering is sort of sharing that experience with the being. So yeah, sometimes you're going to consume part of an offering or the whole of an offering.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you'll do that after it's been offered mm-hmm. and the being has partaken of sort of the spiritual element of it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you'll do that as the offering. That was what it was with me and the house spirits. They wanted to basically siphon off my experience mm-hmm. of eating the fruit and drinking the milk
mm-hmm.
in this stupid, specific way they wanted me to do. There's not a right or a wrong way to do these offerings. It comes down to what the being wants, mm-hmm. right? And like, I've not had a house spirit want me to do that specific thing since.
And luckily for Ode and the house spirits, I keep red fruit in the house all the damn time.
Although there was one time when I had my weekly offering came around and there was no red fruit in the house. I was like, can I get away with a red candy or something? Can we make, and then I'll give you another one as soon as I can go get some red fruit. Sometimes you have to make those quick negotiations. Mm-hmm. The thing hasn't worked out. Love doing sketch grocery shopping, says Kai. Yeah. Yeah, sometimes your grocery shopping will get hijacked by a being who wants something. Setting aside styles, like I said, there are like things you consume, things you don't consume, things you partake in or don't partake mm-hmm. in.
You might put it in a bowl. You might put it in a plate.
Right. You might cover it. You might leave it open.
You might pour it outside.
Yeah.
You know.
Which is a libation.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these things do have more specific names. They just don't matter that much.
Yeah.
unless you're trying to figure out what a book is telling you to do.
Mm-hmm.
So like my offerings to my ancestors are always food offerings. I always offer them food and drink. It's always from my own plate and my own cup. It's a very small amount because they're just very little offering dishes that I have for them on their altar. So it's like a spoonful apiece mm-hmm. of my food and my drink. And then because these offerings are for ancestors or for the dead,
mm-hmm.
I specifically leave those offerings out to decay. My advice is don't leave them out so long that they start to draw pests.
Mm-hmm.
But like those are not to be touched. Anything I offer to the ancestors, and this isn't just because I do offer them occasionally, like a trinket or something that reminds me of one of them or that I know they would have liked.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that goes on the ancestor altar belongs to them and stays with them and isn't part of my living world anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The food that goes to them stays there until it's at least stale mm-hmm. and then it gets thrown away because the offering was the food being there for them
mm-hmm.
and now that the offering is complete and they've taken whatever sustenance they wanted from it, it doesn't matter what happens to the food after that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Other than I don't eat it.
And like for my family, my ancestors, my mother, my father, what I've done, especially for my mother, because she adored flowers, I'll put flowers on the ancestor altar for her.
Mm-hmm.
But at Christmas or Yule time, mm-hmm. my father loved Christmas candy.
Yes.
Absolutely adored the old-fashioned Christmas candy.
Yeah, like those ribbon candies.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely loved it. So I bought some and...
Mm-hmm. And we left some on a dish for him.
Yeah, left some on a dish and it stayed there mm-hmm. until New Year. It really just depends, what do they want? What do you... Especially if it's a ancestor that's a parent, a grandparent, mm-hmm. someone you know.
Yeah, someone you had a relationship with in life. Someone you had a
relationship in life. So you know what they would like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some may want a good strong cup of coffee.
Exactly. Yeah. One of these days I'm going to have to, unfortunately, give my maternal grandfather chicken livers because he fucking loved those.
He did. And we'll have to give my mother Folgers coffee.
Uh-huh.
But yep. We can get the crystals.
Yes.
Because she loved them for some reason.
Kai says, how do I keep cats out of offering dishes? You cover them.
Yeah, You have
a covered dish. We have a couple of covered offering dishes.
Just don't forget that you've put the offering
yes.
in there.
If you leave it too long, you'll have a problem.
Yep. Don't want to do that. Trust me.
Make sure it doesn't start molding, you know. Rhiannon says, ooh, that's interesting. So it seems like me and Ode are kind of swapped, sharing with deity versus sharing with the dead. Yeah, and that's a thing where it's very personal and specific to... you know, practice and relationships.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's important that ancestor offerings are left for them. Mm-hmm. Whereas with spirits or deities, I am much more likely to participate in some way.
Mm-hmm. Finn says, my wife's dad always wants fucking moon pies.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you there's know? Always, and I'm going to hate giving him those chicken livers.
Yep. He loved them fried.
I know. Fried. Which means I'm going to have to get chicken livers and fry them up and put them on the altar for him, and it's going to suck.
Yep.
It's going to smell up my whole room.
I don't know why.
I don't know why he did.
And
he
always, because he was a country boy.
Probably.
And
he always tried to put one on my plate when we ate dinner together. Awful. Awful man. But I'm gonna have to do it for him one of these days. That'll be a sacrifice.
Oh my God.
Yeah, but like with spirits or deities, I found there's much more of a tendency for them to want to participate in some way or to participate through me mm-hmm. in some way in an offering. So here's a weird one, right? This isn't even a thing like I give to her, but it's a thing I do for her.
Mm-hmm.
So like part of my relationship with Freya is connecting with my body in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had a long period of sort of disconnection from my body and some sort of complicated dysphoria. Part of my relationship with Freya, even though she isn't really related to how I started coping with that was more Loki, Freya wants me to engage with my body differently.
Mm-hmm.
She wants me to view it as a vehicle for pleasure or as an object of beauty. So for Freya, an offering I give to Freya often is in the middle of the night with nowhere to go and nothing to do, I have to sit down and do my makeup for her, like very intentionally, very consciously make myself beautiful for her in specific ways and experience that mm-hmm. the experience of learning to make myself beautiful or to experience pleasure for Freya is an offering to Freya,
mm-hmm.
even though she, like, there's nothing I'm giving to her mm-hmm. other than this experience. That she wants me to have.
And that's why that leads into music mm-hmm. and dance, poetry, writing. All of these things can be a form of offering. Mm-hmm. If it is something that connects to your deity or
yep.
or to spirit or whoever it is that you're making this offering mm-hmm. for.
Yeah, so experiences can absolutely be offerings.
Absolutely.
Sometimes that'll sneak up on you. You'll mm-hmm. just be experiencing something unrelated and a deity or a spirit will sort of tap you on the shoulder and say, mm-hmm. hey, I want that.
And let's not forget there are prayers.
Mm-hmm.
Prayers are offerings as yeah. well. If you don't know how to write your own prayers or they don't come to you naturally, there are books.
Right, there are resources.
There are resources. But yeah, absolutely. There is so much more than just food and...
than just stuff.
Stuff that you can give.
Kai says, Artemis makes me go touch grass because I'm an anxious shut-in and Apollo makes me write. Energy is my most important and limited resource.
There you go.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
I think there's a tendency to focus on the physical object of an offering,
mm-hmm.
which makes us sort of undervalue these energy offerings, these mm-hmm. experience offerings, mm-hmm. these task offerings. Like, when Gwyn was diagnosed with cancer. I did a health spell for Gwyn for her surgery, and part of that involved a transaction I made. The arrangement we came to was that I would clean up the environment that we lived in. I would go pick up trash basically every day until Gwyn's surgery was completed. And so that was an offering, a transactional offering that I made with her.
That's another thing, again, going back to Hecate, if you don't do the Dipnon, you can donate food to a homeless shelter. You can donate your time at a pet shelter. Hecate, obviously, there's different deities who have this different energy, things that, activities that would be important to them that you can participate
Those
in.
Those tasks can be offerings.
Can be offerings.
Yeah. So talking about disposal, because that's, again, the one we get asked about constantly. How do I get rid of when you have a physical offering, right? How do you get rid of the physical offering after it's been offered and it's time for it to move off of the altar?
I used to, depending on what it was, I used to return a lot of things to the earth.
That's one you'll hear a lot. I don't do that because I don't. Like, I just don't trust leaving stuff out in the middle of nowhere to not be bad for the environment.
Well, and when I say leaving it to the earth, it's not like something that would be harmful to the, like, I don't believe in, you know, throwing pennies into a river or leaving objects out. And of course, if it's a food offering, it depends on the type of food offering that you would put out there.
And the wildlife in your area.
If it would be bad for them, you don't want to do it.
Or if it would encourage bad behavior in the wildlife, right? Like if you have bears in your area, don't leave out food offerings. How I dispose of probably 99% of my offerings, I throw them in the trash or I pour them down the sink. Because that's that in my modern life, that is how you dispose of things that you are done with. I don't find it personally disrespectful, and I've gotten no pushback from the beings I work with.
And a lot of times that's what I'll do as well. If it's something that is not going to be harmful to the environment, I may take it to a wild space and, you know, and leave it there. But if it is something that could be harmful, when we had a fire pit, I would often
burn it. The other thing is, it's usually not a large amount. Right? Like my offerings to my ancestors are, like I said, a spoonful.
Yeah.
So it's not like I'm throwing away a significant amount of food.
For those of you who have a compost pile, that would be an excellent place. Like,
I think it's no proteins on compost.
Yeah, that's true. You get the idea. If it's something that can go into a compost pile, because you don't want to...
Exactly.
Yeah, you don't want to do meat or
eggs.
No proteins.
If you have a garden.
If you have a garden.
Would definitely be a good reuse option.
When we went walking with Shadow Bear in the forest, we offered tobacco.
Yep, tobacco offerings, which were just, you know, sprinkled them in the woods. But that was the process of making the offering. So it wasn't a disposal necessarily. It was just like, that this was, offering is being made outside, so we don't have to worry about disposing of it.
That's true. Good point.
That which is a point. Some offerings don't need to be disposed of, right? Like if you're offering clean water in a glass, you can just
pour it.
Well, you can just leave that to evaporate.
Well, that's true.
Like if you're offering clean water in a glass on like an ancestor shrine, you can just leave that until it evaporates and then fill up the glass again.
You know what? Honestly, a lot of times I do that with wine.
Offerings. Oh, yeah.
I just let it go and then clean the dish. Or the goblet.
Yeah, once all the actual liquid is evaporated and it's just like...
Sometimes you can just put things down the disposer.
Yeah, I guess here's the thing. There's a great concern for like respect in disposal of offerings. And I understand where that comes from, but I think it's overblown sometimes. Especially with new pagans who just sort of aren't certain of what the standards are. Like I said, I've never gotten pushback from throwing away an offering that's been used up or pouring it down the drain.
Neither have I.
I've never had a deity get angry at it. I've never had the ancestors complain that like, oh, you threw away the offering you gave us because I left it out for them, right?
Yeah.
By the time I'm disposing of it, they're already done with it. It's just trash now. The only time I might like not do that is if I give them something that is intended to be retained. Like if I give them jewelry or I give them
stones
or I give them paintings. But those things just stay on the altar, right? They don't get disposed of.
And there are some things that if the deity or the spirit is done with them, they can be cleansed and used for another purpose.
And given some other purpose. Because, you may have a spirit that's like, I want this gold necklace for the next 30 days, right? For my purposes. And then when those 30 days are up, you don't have to, like, you don't have to throw away the necklace, right? You don't have to, like, melt it down. You can just cleanse it And if you don't feel comfortable still using it, you can sell it or give it to someone else or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Rhiannon Grace says, I definitely had to get used to it. There was a lot of online pushback against people doing so in the witchy spaces I was on a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Same people who'd shit on me for letting the rot set in. Lots of people who like to shame new witches. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
And I understand that there are a lot of people who have that. You got to go bury it in the woods or something. That's fine for them. Mm-hmm. But you can't let how they are dealing with something dictate how you deal with something.
And don't let them do it to you either.
Exactly. Don't let them shame you.
Yeah.
Into doing something you're not
willing is hard,
or comfortable to do. Yeah, it is very hard, especially for younger witches or newer witches.
So I know it's hard not to let people's judgments get to you.
Yes, but that's just another, and here's our buzzword, it's just another form of gatekeeping.
It really is, yeah. And among other things, like, just not everyone has access to wild space.
Exactly. Like, I do not have access to a crossroads
or wild space. For your Dipnon.
For Dipnon. So I have to be creative in how I do this. And I have not gotten any kind of pushback from Hakati about that. And trust me.
She would.
She would. If she was not pleased, I would know.
We've talked about that before. She's made complaints before.
She has. And I've had to adjust and do things differently. Mm-hmm. But I've never had that issue when it comes to Dipnon.
Yeah. Rochelle says, in my experience, once a spirit or deity is done with an offering, they have no more concern for what happens to its remains than we would have for the packaging. That's actually a really good comparison.
I think it's just the concept that it is an offering, which makes it special.
But I feel like by the time you're at the end of the offering period, the specialness has already been taken.
The energy, the what made it an offering, what made it special, what made it sacrificial, it has been used.
Right. It's already been consumed.
It's already been consumed.
Yeah. It's been transmitted.
Yeah, it has. So why do we have to get so hung up on having only to dispose things in a particular fashion?
Yeah. Because in a lot of traditions, especially even in like ancient traditions, it was like explicit that the gods were not eating the food. The gods were eating the energy in the food, like the essence of the food. They were eating some intangible property of the food. Mm-hmm. And then the food was left behind and usually you ate it.
And if the food is disappearing from your altar, better check and see what your animals are doing. Yeah. Or your children.
Yeah, exactly. There are all kinds of records of ancient festivals where you sacrifice a cow to the gods and you cook it and they eat some intangible quality of the sacrificed cow. And then everyone at the festival eats the meat.
Yeah. A lot of times it was the aroma of the cooking food.
Yeah, they were smelling it.
It was the aroma of the food, and then the people would consume it. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something we have to remember in our modern times.
Yeah, exactly.
That our ancestors did not waste.
Yeah, exactly.
These offerings and these gifts.
Exactly. The only kinds of offerings or sacrifices that they didn't like consume or partake of were burnt offerings.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And like a lot of times, a portion went to the priests. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, it was their dinner.
It was their dinner.
Or it went to the poor.
Or to the poor, like I keep referencing
exactly, the Dipnon. But it was no less an offering to Hecate because she was eating the intangible essence of the food.
Exactly.
And the symbolism of it, the sacrifice that you were making. I think that's a big part of the disposal question is like, would our ancestors have done it in a particularly special way? Probably not.
Probably not.
So why are we getting so hung up on it? Mm-hmm. Like, is the fact that you have a trash can in your house and a sink to pour your libations down, is that too convenient for you? Mm-hmm. Can you not tolerate your religion if it doesn't cost you something?
Mm-hmm. Now, I will often, because it's water, I like to pour my libation of water out onto the ground. And part of that is because it makes sense to me.
Yeah.
You know, to do that. And it's... But I have no problem with pouring, if I don't let it evaporate away, I have no problem letting wine go down the sink.
Exactly.
You know?
It just is what it is. That's what you do with things when you're done with them in the modern world. I think this is also, again, sort of a, like, we have to adjust to the fact that we don't live in ancient times.
We don't have to completely 100% try to recreate or emulate those times because we don't live in those times.
Exactly.
Our circumstances, our resources, what we have is different.
Exactly. And it's not better or worse.
It's just different.
Right? Like there's no perfect prelapsarian ancient past where religion was immaculate. Mm-hmm. You know, it was always messy and just part of being alive. Yep. So like, don't, this sounds absurd to say, but don't put your religion on a pedestal.
Yeah, exactly. I love what Kai Oakenshield says. Pouring stuff out is real satisfying, too. I love giving libations. Yeah. I love to do that.
You're not wrong.
I love to pour out water during the full moon.
When I was working at Valhalla as a Valkyrie, I used to pour out a mead on our offering stone out back at the start of the night, and it was just so pleasing to just pop the top and just pour it out.
I'll do that if, like I said, if I'm not, you know, a lot of times if I'm not letting the wine evaporate, it will go out into the yard as well. Mm-hmm. But yes, especially water. I love to just
let it go
and just let it pour out slowly from that goblet. It is very satisfying. Yeah. It feels very
It satisfies some human impulse,
some
I guess.
Human about ritual.
Yeah.
You know, that you are offering this.
Mm-hmm. I offer this to you and I surrender it to you.
Yeah.
And this is how I do it. And it's just something humans seem to be drawn to.
Mm-hmm.
It's pouring out a liquid on the ground. Who knows?
We like it.
Who knows why?
We like it.
It satisfies the monkey brain.
That's right.
All right. Let's see. Was there anything else we needed to cover really quick?
Other than, you know, different types of food offerings or different things that you can do.
But yeah. I mean, it's whatever food is available usually.
Yeah. But like, if you want to get specifics, like, you know, for hearth deities, you got bread, you got grain, you got oil and salt, milk, wine. Milk is a good one.
Yeah.
Milk is a good one.
You got to watch that one though, because it will go off faster than you think.
Herbs for cooking.
Yeah.
You know, herbs are always a good thing to offer. Flowers. Yeah.
Now, here's something interesting, right? And then we're probably going to have to wrap it up.
Yep.
But consider the offerings you're making, especially with food offerings, especially if they're foods you grew yourself.
Mm-hmm.
First, you got to give an offering to the plant to take that object from it, and then you're going to offer that to the deity, right? So, like, you got to pour out some water for the plant, take a few sprigs of rosemary, take that rosemary that you just already paid for, and make that an offering.
And maybe throw in a little thank you to the earth as well.
Uh-huh, yeah. So, like, even these offerings aren't as simple as they seem, right? There are layers of relationships that you're building. You don't have just one relationship with a being. You have a web of relationships with multiple beings.
And I think that is important to remember. Again, plants love water, so that's a really good offering to a plant, especially if you're going to request some of its...
Right. Some of its bounty.
Some of its bounty.
Yeah. Give it some fertilizer. Give it some water.
Oh, fertilizer for a plant is a great offering.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. They definitely love that one. That's an expensive offering for a plant.
Mm-hmm.
This is
plant food.
Exactly. This is one of those cost benefits things, right? So like an offering that's super, super expensive to a plant isn't necessarily an expensive offering to anybody else. The plant really loves getting plant food. You can get a lot of mileage out of a plant food offering.
That's right.
To a plant, but that plant food's not going to get you shit from another being.
That's right.
It's all context dependent.
That's right. And again, when it comes to food offerings, just be smart. With honey, just don't leave it out long enough for the ants to come and get it.
Yeah, exactly. Honey is a great offering.
Oh, it is a great offering.
That's another one that's
like... Milk and honey.
Yeah, that's another one that's like more expensive than you realize.
Yeah, yeah. Join our Tiger Amanda and relax with the salts of Wonderful Body Co. These soaks and scrubs, inspired by popular books and characters, are designed to delight multiple senses with fragrant scents and sparkling mica. You can also find rollerball fragrances and hair oils. With dozens of options available, you're sure to find something you like in the Wonderful Body Co. collection. This week, Ode is recommending...
Cedar.
Thank you. Available as bath salt or ritual oil with scents of blue lavender, cedarwood smoke, bergamot, oak moss, and clary sage. Find Wonderful Body Co. online at wonderfulbodyco.com or go directly to the shop at etsy.com/shop/wonderfulbodyco.
Hail Dictinus.
Hail Dictinus.
Now we're going to wrap it up. You can find us on Google if you Google the number 3 and the letters P-A-A-C, or the number 3 and the words pagans and a cat. You can find us on our website at the number 3 pagansandacat.com. We have links to a bunch of stuff on that website, including Gwyn's Patheos Pagan blog, our Patreon.
Yep. Oh, and as always, thank you to our patrons who make this possible. And thank you to every single listener.
Yes.
Every single one of you in the Pride. We love you.
Yes. We appreciate your attention, I guess. That's effectively what it is.
Yep, your attention, your suggestions, your just your everything. Mm-hmm. We love you.
And yeah, do join us at the Discord server or the Facebook group. Pride has lots of interesting conversations there. Well, apart from just the discussions we have on the episodes, we've got like a channel on the server that's for episode discussions, and it is by far the least busy channel on the server.
Yep. And of course, the Facebook group, if that's something you would like to check out. Mm-hmm. I'm on TikTok, yep. Instagram.
I'm not on any of those things because I don't do social media. But yeah, I think that's all the stuff. All right. Mm-hmm. So goodbye.
Goodbye.